Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, Pope Benedict's hopes for a world at peace marked by social justice, solidarity, and respect for human rights. We bring you more reaction on the Holy Father's speech to diplomats at the start of the new year. And the patrons of the Vatican Museum's office gets a new director. He tells us more about himself and his priorities as he takes up his new job, supporting the Holy See's massive collection of art and architecture. It was with a message of hope that Pope Benedict ushered in the new year, a message of anticipation of the good things and the peace that mankind can accomplish if it demonstrates the will. In his traditional January discourse to diplomats accredited to the Holy See, the Pope described diplomacy itself as the art of hope. And perhaps more importantly, he said diplomacy must give hope.
La diplomatie est, dans une certaine façon, l'art de l'espérance. Elle vit de l'espérance et cherche à en discerner même les signes les plus ténus. La diplomatie doit donner de l'espérance.
Pope Benedict spoke of the enthusiastic welcome he'd received from Brazilians during his visit there last year and noted what he described as eloquent signs of hope for Latin America in the economic and social spheres, though he said there were some reasons for concern. Well, Chile's ambassador to the Holy See, Pablo Cabrera, spoke to us after Monday's discourse.
The arts of diplomacy have a lot of goals, and one of those, the key one, is to be committed to reach those goals with hope. Therefore, hope is the center of the diplomacy today. That's why the Pope is quite right, telling the international community to have hope in order to reach those goals that the mankind and humanity needs to receive rapidly. That's why it's a matter of all governments, all countries, to work together, to get together and work together towards those goals. And to have hope, that this means you are working for something. As long as you are working for something, in this case it might be peace or must be peace, that implies that we have hope for peace. That's why I appreciate very much what the Pope said, in particular as in Latin America, a continent in which the peace and hope as there are two leading concepts on which we base, at least in Chile, I can talk for Chile, at least in Chile, we base our economic and social policies that the government is implementing. And during a long time, for a long time, those hopes and those lines in our policies are very much in line to the social doctrine of the Church. I think those principles are within our spirit, within our legal system, and still we have hope to maintain them in order to reach progress and peace.
Lebanon's ambassador to the Holy See, Naji Abiasi, called the Pope a keen and experienced observer of global issues, who is urging international leaders to take action to curb the world's many conflicts and problems before it's too late.
Pope Benedictus XVI has a very clear mind and a comprehensive strategic view about the global issues facing humanity. This strategic view is based on wisdom, historical knowledge and experience, as well as on moral and spiritual considerations, far from any partisan interest. What the Pope is saying, this is how we view the problems confronting the world. This is the best way, from our point of view, to solve these problems in conformity with the New Testament and with our shared commitment to pursue the common good. Of course, the Church has no coercive means to impose its message, but it remains that it's up to the governments, to the leaders, as well as to the international organizations, to take the proper decisions and the historic choices on due time and not in the aftermath when it's too late to reverse the course of events.
In his discourse, Pope Benedict noted in particular the international community's deep concern about the Middle East, but pointed to the hope offered by the Annapolis Conference. United States Ambassador to the Holy See, Francis Rooney.
I think it's great that, given the fact that President convened the Annapolis meeting and the Holy See was included at the request of United States of America, and now he's going personally to the Middle East, that the Holy Father would have virtually started his discourse with Israel and Palestine. And the fact that he supported the concept of Annapolis as an abandonment of the partisan and unilateral approaches, and he called for a truly global solution that respects the rights of legitimate rights of all the different constituent parties. That is wonderful to hear. I think that goes hand in hand with what was trying to be achieved in Annapolis by having a lot of countries participate that have been reluctant participants in the past, and to recognize the need for a legitimate Palestinian state which doesn't threaten the peace and security of Israel at the same time.
It is reassuring to notice that His Holiness the Pope has put the emphasis on the necessity to abandon partisan or unilateral solutions in favor of a global approach respectful of the rights and legitimate interests of all the peoples of the region, which means not only on the Israeli-Palestinian track that should be, of course, pursued, but also on all tracks.
The Pope appealed to Israelis and Palestinians to implement the commitments they made in Annapolis and expedite the restarted peace process. And he urged the international community to support both peoples and to understand their respective sufferings and fears. Pope Benedict then spoke of Lebanon, wracked by a recent war between Hezbollah and Israel, and a series of political assassinations, bombings, and political uncertainty after the repeated failure of the government and opposition to elect a new president.
Comment ne pas être proche du Liban dans les épreuves et les violences qui continuent à secouer ce cher pays?
Who can remain unmoved by the plight of Lebanon amid its trials and all the violence that continues to shake that beloved country, he said. The Pope said he earnestly wished that the Lebanese will be able to decide freely on their future. Lebanese Ambassador Abi Assi again.
Concerning Lebanon, the Pope referred to it as beloved country. He expressed the wish that the Lebanese people will be able to decide freely on the future, which means free from threats and pressures. But at the same time, he reminded the Lebanese, beginning with the leaders, that they should put aside particular interests and pledge themselves to the path of dialogue and reconciliation to become once more an example of the peaceful coexistence of different communities. And this is a real challenge that we should all be able to meet.
The Pope, who spoke of the need to resolve conflict, poverty, and social injustice across each continent, was challenging the international community to take effective action, not only on these, but to satisfy every man and woman's legitimate aspirations to food, water, energy, medicine, and technology.
His words are like always, they're a real call and a real challenge to remain focused on the impact of our actions and our power on the human dignity of people in the world and on the architectures for peace, development, and prosperity in the world. And the United States is a big country and has a lot of influence in the world. But as you say, the Pope's addressing the entire world, and there's a lot of other countries that have similar stakes and opportunities for influence. You know, when the Holy Father talks about natural law being the basis of legal systems, and then in the two paragraphs later, he's talking about some of the horrible things going on in various parts of Africa that are virtually lawless. And then he talks about promoting human dignity. Well, all those things tie together to say there's got to be some better ways. And I think President Bush has called for a lot of that, certainly in the context of Africa as well.
Pope Benedict urged the international community to not just proclaim, but to put into practice the universally recognized human rights and to defend the cornerstone of those rights, religious liberty.
I think that the United States is uniquely positioned to show the world what true religious freedom can bring about through the workings of our First Amendment. We've been fortunate enough as a country to start with a clean canvas, to have the church and the state basically separated because there was no country in existence. And so to start with the First Amendment that says, let all religions flourish, don't stifle any of them. And often that's been talked about over here. Even the Holy Father mentioned to me one time about how wonderfully the First Amendment's worked in the United States to create opportunities for religious pluralism and people to develop their faith. So, you know, we're kind of a special country for that, and hopefully that we can spread that gospel, if you will, a little bit, and some other countries would realize that they don't have anything to fear from religion, that the state has nothing to fear from religion, and nor does religion really have anything to fear from the state if they're both allowed to do the things that they can do. It's kind of like the, you know, Caesar under Caesar's kind of situation.
Pope Benedict will be traveling to the United States for a pastoral visit this spring. Besides a brief sojourn in Washington, D.C., the Holy Father will be going to the United Nations, headquartered in New York.
It's exciting at many levels. First of all, obviously for Catholics, it's exciting to have the Holy Father come to the United States. But it's also exciting for our country to have the Holy Father come and meet with the president. If not the, it's certainly one of the only times a pope has ever been to the White House, maybe the only time. And I think that's reflective of the great values, protecting religious freedom, promoting human dignity, of family, of life, etc., that the President of the United States has vigorously defended. And I think the Pope appreciates that. And, you know, they had a great meeting here in June. And so this opportunity to highlight these very important global issues can't help but raise the bar. Just as it's hugely important that the Holy Father and the President have a chance to showcase these important issues that both of them have demonstrated an unfailing commitment to, it's equally important that the Holy Father go to the UN and carry the message the same place. And, of course, the UN has a much wider reach than just speaking with the President of the United States, and a different kind of reach. And there's all kinds of elements of the UN, some of which have more or less symmetry with the views of the Holy See. So it'll be very interesting to see the Holy Father speak to them.
U.S. Ambassador Francis Rooney. And earlier you heard Naji Abiasi, Lebanon's ambassador to the Holy See, as well as Chile's ambassador, Pablo Cabrera. heard that the Vatican museums have recently extended their opening hours to the public by 1 hour to meet the ever-growing demand of tourists and pilgrims who line up every day to see one of the world's biggest and finest collections of art. The museums have had to increase the entrance ticket price by 1 euro to help cover the added expense of longer opening hours. But the entrance fees cannot come close to paying for the upkeep and repair of the Vatican's huge collection of statues, paintings, mosaics, tapestries, architecture, old carriages, and countless more works of art. That's why the Vatican Museums and the Church rely heavily on generous individuals and groups who help cover some of the costs. Well, the Office of the Patrons of the Arts of the Vatican Museums was founded in 1983 when a number of artworks from the Vatican collection needed to be restored before going on exhibit in the United States. Groups of donors from New York, Chicago, and California came together to help support the museums in that endeavor and defray costs like insurance, shipping, and promotion of the collection. The new patron's office was born to help maintain and restore the Vatican's enormous collection and make it available to a bigger audience by taking prestigious works outside the Vatican walls to museums around the world. I sat down with the patron's office's new director, Legionary Father Mark Haidu, a native of the U.S. state of Ohio, who was recently ordained upon completion of his theological studies at the Pontifical Athenaeum Regina Apostolorum here in Rome. I wanted to know more about him and why he chose his vocation and what he sees as his priorities in his new job. But first, I wanted to know how he reacted when he received news of his appointment to head up the patron's office.
I was certainly honored when I received the notification that I would be taken on to work in this position. I didn't really know all that it would imply at the beginning, as is often the case. One receives a mission, and then little by little, it becomes clear the weight of that particular mission, but I was certainly honored and also excited because it's all art and history, and the patrimony of the Church has always been for me a personal interest, and also I think a great means of serving humanity today. It's a means that's into the heart of humanity, at the heart of culture, that perhaps is a privileged means to bring the gospel to people. In this day and age when image, when appearance, when beauty, aesthetics is so important to people, it can be a way that the Church can also enter into areas where otherwise perhaps the gospel wouldn't penetrate. So it's a great privilege to be able to help the Church and help the governor's office directly and help the Holy Father in the end be present in modern culture through art.
Why do you think you were chosen for this job? And what sort of experience or expertise do you think that you'll be able to bring to this position?
That would really be a question we'd have to ask His Eminence or those that were involved maybe in the decision. Certainly a willingness, desire to serve the Church, to help. I have some formation in art and in history, and that's in my background. Also some experience in dealing with financial benefactors, etc.
So, Father Mark, what are your priorities then in this job? What do you see as the biggest challenges, the things that need to be addressed the most quickly?
Well, I think certainly the first priority is to learn, get to know the patrons, get to know the museum direction, get to know the governatorato, because my position is really one of service, of being a bridge, of supporting, of the mission of the museums, supporting the Holy Father, supporting more directly the President, Cardinal Giovanni Loyola. So that's really my first kind of priority, personal priority, is to learn. It's an office that's done very well in its mission. It's fulfilled its mission very well. My predecessor, Father Alan Dustin, did a wonderful job in his work here. Expanded the context, made the whole institution of the patrons grow in the United States, especially a little bit in South America, also in Europe. So he did an impressive job in those 14 years. So really, it'll be my job to get to know what he did that worked so well, and then also begin to confront the challenges that he faced and that will continue to be there always in developing a greater network, more contacts, more people to support the mission of the museums. And then any new projects that come up, we'll roll up our sleeves and try to make them happen. You know?
So it means you'll probably be making a lot of trips, going to the U.S., to England, to South America perhaps, to meet these patrons.
Well, certainly to get to know all the patrons, it'll be necessary to go visit them and where they are. The patrons are organized in chapters, as we call them, according to their state or their, above all, their state, the Michigan chapter, Ohio chapter, California chapter, Texas chapter, etc. And then here in Europe, it's one chapter as is because we have contacts all over Europe that kind of form one contact or are because they are people also that travel a lot and they'll have contacts in other American cities, maybe have friends in those chapters and so are incorporated through there. But nonetheless, I'll have to go get to know them, get to know their interests, get to know also what their ideas are for the patrons, because it's the structure is somewhat loose in a good sense, in the sense that each city has its own flavor, the cultural things that they support and help. And so also to get to know on a local level what they can do for fundraisers, what they can do for promoting Christian culture on a local level, it will also be different. So it'll be important to get to know their realities, get to know also the diocese that they're in, where they're serving, where they're working, and help, you know, motivate, support, coordinate all that energy, all that work.
But why did you choose the Legionaries of Christ?
Well, it was actually because of an encounter with my parish priest. I was very close to my parish priest back in Akron, Ohio, St. Mary's. Father Hilkert, when I explained to him my interest in the priesthood, immediately told me, I think you should become a Legionary of Christ. I had never heard of them, but he knew me well. He knew my background. He had been my spiritual director, so to speak, my confessor for a long time, and immediately directed me that way, so to speak. Listening to him, I sent them off a letter. They answered me, visited me. I visited them and really found a harmony, so to speak, in what I was looking for, which were young men that really wanted to give their lives to Christ in a serious way, so to speak, in a committed way. And I recognized in the formation that the Legionaries received that they would help me reach the ideal that I was striving for, which was to be a holy priest. You know, that's kind of was the ideal that I saw in my parish priest, what I wanted to reach. If I was going to be a priest, that's the kind of priest I wanted to be. And I felt conviction in that visit and that contact that they would help me become that, you know.
Are the Legionaries, among all the religious orders, do they have more vocations than others? It seems to me that they have been quite successful.
Thanks be to God, we have a good number of vocations. Certainly, perhaps the overall number wouldn't reach what other more experienced and more mature congregations in the church are receiving. Our numbers are still not at that level. Certainly, percentage-wise of how many we are in the church at this point, is thanks be to God, a grace that we've received, and also a grace we're responsible to then serve the church with the vocations that God has been giving us. So we continue, hopefully, to continue to serve, to put all these men, once they're formed, back into areas of service where the church most needs them, and help the Holy Father in that way, which is really a fundamental aspect of our charism, is to serve the church, to serve the Holy Father, which is really our fundamental intention, what we're really after, you know. So, and that's also what attracts a lot of young men, a clear ideal, an enthusiastic spirit, a mission that's very clear, an ideal that's very high, but very demanding, but attractive. And so hopefully we'll continue to be able to live that kind of spirit, the spirit that the church has always lived, and all the priests, so many priests and so many congregations and dioceses throughout the world that hold up this ideal of what it means to be a holy priest. Hopefully we can continue to contribute to that and continue to attract young men.
You said your family was a very religious mm-hmm. family. Did that sort of steer you in this direction as well?
Certainly it did. My family were a family of seven children. I'm the sixth. We were involved in the charismatic renewal there in the United States, and very much a prayer group that was very connected to the diocese and to the parish. Thanks be to God, our bishop knew very well how to take advantage of, so to speak, the charismatic movement there to serve the parishes, to be involved there. And so that spirit of communion, that the spirituality that was offered to me as a young boy and in the different groups that we were involved in, the youth group at the parish, etc., well, all those were just so many seeds that eventually when I became older and needed to decide what I was going to do with my life, well, it became clear that if God was calling me to the priesthood, then that would be what I should do. God's will is what makes you happy. And if that was God's will for me, I'd be happy doing it. So thanks to all the priests that I knew and all the lay people that I knew, it was not a difficult decision. Certainly every vocation requires a bit of step in faith, a bit of sacrifice, but maybe God knew I couldn't handle so much and he made it somewhat easier on me than on others. And also that experience in the parish with the charismatic community and the parish life there was also a great experience for also kind of the spirit that the church is living now of these so many lay movements, the legionaries with the Reinum Christi movement and so many others that are doing great work in the church. It was a great experience for me growing up to see how those two realities can help one another to fulfill their particular mission. You know, there's a great quote from the then Cardinal Ratzinger that the movements need the parish structure, the diocesan structure, to not become sectarian. And the parish structure needs the movements to not ossify, as he put it. So that balance there, both can serve one another, certainly both under the direction of the bishop, which is the fundamental structure of the church, is the diocese and the parishes. But working together can be a great spirit of renewal and evangelization for the church.
And at the start of your priesthood, you don't sort of miss that opportunity to be a diocesan priest?
No, thanks be to God. I have a wonderful appreciation for the diocesan vocation. It's a high ideal. They're men who give their lives to the church in a very difficult circumstances, oftentimes being alone in a parish or covering several parishes. It requires a great deal of virtue and heroism and a deep spiritual life to maintain. Certainly it's a vocation to be valued, to be honored. It's not a vocation God asked of me, so perhaps the chords of my heart ring more truly with the vocation that I've been given, which is a religious vocation in the Legionaries of Christ. But nonetheless, that spiritual call within a religious family is not contradiction with, but immediately recognizes the beauty of the other vocation, not because you want to live it, but because you see its beauty and can honor and support it and work with it. And in the end, we're both trying to give ourselves as much as we possibly can to our Lord in the particular vocation he's given us. So miss it, no, value it, and love it, and want to support it, yes.
Legionary Father Mark Haidu, the new director of the Patrons of the Vatican Museum's office. That concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.